Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK World Radio Japan. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The United Nations has been holding a General Assembly this week with pre-recorded speeches from world leaders. The President of the United States started it off in a most confrontational way, which the rest of the world has found ominous, and little of the content was discussed in American media. Trump emphasized a nationalist approach to COVID, the climate, and most everything else, which is ironic in an address to an organization with a goal of multilateral cooperation. In New York City, the United Nations is also hosting a climate summit. Dr. Miranda Sawyers, professor of climate policy in Germany, speaks about the relationship of climate change and the California fires, debunking the notion that poor forest management has created the ongoing devastation. Then brief reports on 500 beached pilot whales in Tasmania. The poisoned Russian opposition leader is out of the hospital in Berlin, and surges in COVID cases across Europe have led many more restrictions being imposed this week. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
We start tonight in New York City and online. Both are where the United Nations General Assembly began convening today. It comes in the middle of a pandemic and on the 75th anniversary of the UN's founding. Now, this is an assembly unlike any before. For one, this year, world leaders are not really meeting in New York, but instead addressing the forum via video because of the coronavirus pandemic. U.S. President Donald Trump was among the first speakers. In some of his comments today, he lashed out at China. Take a listen.
As we pursue this bright future, we must hold accountable the nation which unleashed this plague onto the world, China. In the earliest days of the virus, China locked down travel domestically while allowing flights to leave China and infect the world. China condemned my travel ban on their country, even as they canceled domestic flights and locked citizens in their homes.
Well, shortly after President Trump, the Chinese President Xi Jinping presented his pre-recorded video message. Here is an excerpt from that speech.
We should follow the guidance of science, give full play to the leading role of the World Health Organization, and launch a joint international response to beat this pandemic. Any attempt of politicizing the issue or stigmatization must be rejected.
The other very conspicuous element of President Trump's pre-recorded speech, it echoed a certain thematic themes. They're emphasizing national interest. I suggest we take a listen and then we continue our conversation from that.
As president, I have rejected the failed approaches of the past, and I am proudly putting America first, just as you should be putting your countries first.
His speech was very short, 5, 6, 7 minutes. It was very brief, the tone very bellicose, now urging everybody to, you know, protect their, act within their national interests. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, he has had that sort of message at the United Nations before, but it was very compact and very kind of punchy in this case. But every time he said it, it is just so striking, isn't it? Because it is absolutely the opposite of the whole idea of the United Nations, that you can't only put your own country first because because there are common interests around the world which countries need to cooperate to work towards. Donald Trump, of course, has kind of abandoned that, and he said, no, this is the wrong way to go. He's walked out of the Paris Climate Agreement, he's walked out of the World Health Organization, he's walked out of the deal to try and limit Iran's nuclear program. What some people might say is it can serve as a bit of an on goal, because what afterwards, Xi Jinping's speech, in Xi Jinping's speech, he came across as the sort of calm proponent of multilateralism, of working together, saying we should work together to create a better world through these multilateral institutions. Whereas China's role in multilateralism is highly questionable as well. Multilateralism where it suits it, but very aggressive behavior where that suits it. So to an extent, people might say that, you know, the Trump tone played into Xi Jinping's hands, and particularly because Xi Jinping used his speech to say that China was going to be more ambitious with its climate change goals. Some people will be coming away from that and thinking, well, China looks like the more reasonable partner.
As we go to air, Richard, I mean, if you look on the homepage of the New York Times or the Washington Post, for that matter, you will really have to struggle to find an article about these speeches and the UN General Assembly today. What does it tell us? Does the UN, does it still matter?
Well, I noticed the same thing, and it is striking that German news sites are featuring Donald Trump's speech more prominently than many American ones. I think we do have to stress, though, that kind of American neglect and disinterest in the United Nations is nothing that new. I mean, you'll remember back in 1997, Ted Turner, the founder of CNN, donated $1 billion to the United Nations at a time when Congress had stopped paying its dues. George Bush nominated as the ambassador to the UN a man who had said the best thing you could do to the UN was to knock off a bunch of stories from the building. So it's not so new. I think what's more important, really, is the bigger challenge to the UN at the moment is that so many countries, with the US at the pinnacle, are led by leaders who question the very idea of international cooperation.
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of enemies right now of multilateralism, and those enemies are in power around the world. Richard Walker, our chief international editor. Richard, thank you. All right, and joining me tonight is Miranda Schreuers, professor of environmental and climate policy at the Bavarian School of Public Policy in Munich. Professor, it's good to have you on the program. You know, we've seen the images of the fires in California. We know that climate change is facilitating the severity of these fires. We still have people like the U.S. president who say it's the result of bad forest management. What do you say to that?
I think it's pretty clear that climate change is progressing because of our CO2 emissions, and forest management is certainly not the main cause of what is going on here. We see these forest fires in Siberia, in Canada, in Brazil. So it's actually a global phenomenon that really is quite frightening.
And where are we in terms of staying true to the Paris Climate Agreement? And, of course, the goal is to keep the average global temperature from rising more than 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius. Are we on track to meet that goal?
Well, we could be, but we're not. The pandemic has perhaps led to a little bit of a dip in terms of emissions for a short time, but we really need to take some drastic action in the next years in order to bring ourselves on track to a climate neutral 2050. And what we also heard in the summit opening in New York today was the need to really start looking at a much earlier date at 2030 and really pushing big companies, pushing countries to make changes, deep changes in how they go about funding projects, taking subsidies away from fossil fuel industries, shifting us towards renewable energy, away from fossil fuels. We have the technologies to do this. We simply need to make those choices to really start switching and to switch quickly. A 1.5 degree target. We really only have a few years left to cut deeply. We're talking about 50% emission cuts in the next 10 years, so we really need to act now.
Yeah, and these are drastic cuts, but the numbers show that the public is with you. More and more people around the world want these changes. They are concerned about climate change. But the world's biggest polluters, China, the United States, their leaders, the presidents, they are not as concerned right now. What can be done then to change this if the most powerful people on the planet are not on board?
I think we're seeing a lot of push from the bottom up. And we're also starting to see some big companies that are recognizing that change is around the corner and they want to be early players in this process. So what I can say to everybody who's listening is put pressure on your political representatives, call for action, tell companies that you want to see a change. It really is very critical. And we're talking about what kind of planet we leave for next generations, but also what kind of planet many of us ourselves will experience. And we're seeing that with what you started us with, this discussion about the forest fires in California. Another record hot year this year. It's really time to take action.
Yeah, you make a very good point. It's no longer a problem of the future. It is definitely a problem of the present as well. Professor Miranda Scheuer is joining us tonight from Munich. Professor, thank you.
More than half of the pilot whales stuck in Australia's biggest stranding on record are believed to have died. Rescuers have been struggling to free the nearly 500 mammals beached off Tasmania. The stranded pod was first believed to be about half the size before further aerial searches spotted another group of around 200 nearby.
At least 380 pilot whales beached off the Australian island of Tasmania have died. Rescuers have managed to save more than 80 of the animals, but others are still stuck in shallow water. Biologists must now decide how to dispose of the decomposing bodies, which could be dangerous to marine life.
The Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been discharged from the hospital in Berlin, where he has been treated for poisoning. The Kremlin critic posted this photo that you're about to see right here, seated on a bench in a park on social media after leaving the hospital, and wrote that he still has a long rehabilitation ahead. While a German Chancellor Angela Merkel described the case as, quote, attempted murder after a lab analysis showed he was poisoned with the Novichok nerve agent. While Navalny was airlifted to Germany last month after becoming sick during a visit to Siberia, Russia said there is no evidence of a crime.
Here's a look at some of the developments now in the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. public health body, the CDC, has withdrawn guidance saying that fine aerosol particles floating in the air may spread the virus. The retraction has sparked concern of political interference. Mexico has passed 700,000 confirmed coronavirus cases, but officials say that the overall infection rate is still slowing down. New Zealand recorded no new COVID-19 infections on Tuesday. There are now only 61 registered active cases in the country. Targeted lockdowns took effect in Spain on Monday, and France is seeing massive spikes in infections and increasingly full hospitals.
The U.S. death toll from COVID-19 has passed the grim milestone of more than 200,000. That's according to Johns Hopkins University. That's the highest number for any country so far, accounting for more than 1 in 5 COVID deaths globally. It's putting President Donald Trump's handling of the pandemic in the spotlight as he campaigns for a second term in office. On average, the U.S. now losing around 800 lives every day to the virus. Trump's Democratic rival, Joe Biden, says Trump's lies and incompetence are why the United States has seen so many deaths from this virus. Britain has announced a series of new restrictions designed to combat a dramatic spike in virus cases. The UK Prime Minister says the new measures could last well into 2021. Spain is battling Western Europe's highest COVID-19 case load, Madrid especially hard hit. The government is considering expanding a lockdown to include the entire city of Madrid. Russian President Vladimir Putin has called for the World Health Organization to be strengthened to coordinate the global response to the pandemic. Putin has also offered to share Russia's controversial new coronavirus vaccine with other countries.
Infections in the Czech Republic are rising rapidly. The country had early success in tackling the virus, but researchers say the current trend is alarming. Israel is tightening its lockdown even more, saying the nation is on the edge of the abyss. All non-essential businesses will have to close for 2 weeks from Friday on. And masks are mandatory in busy public places in Munich starting today. The German city has canceled this year's Oktoberfest and is trying to bring a new outbreak of infections under control.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. The United States has broken with all permanent members of the UN Security Council and unilaterally declared the reimposition of all UN sanctions against Iran. At the UN General Assembly, Venezuela called for a united front to fight the U.S. hegemony and blockades at a time of global crises. Sudan appears to be preparing to join the United Arab Emirate and Bahrain in normalizing relations with Israel in return for over $3 billion in economic aid and being removed from the U.S. State Department's State Sponsors of Terrorism list. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The United States has broken with all permanent members of the United Nations Security Council and unilaterally declared the reimposition of all UN sanctions against Iran, a claim rejected by Iran and the international community, including Washington's close allies, as having no legal basis. In a statement on Sunday, following the expiration of a deadline set by Washington, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo threatened consequences for any UN member state that does not comply with the punitive measures, which were lifted under a landmark nuclear deal that was signed between six world powers and Iran in 2015, but was then abandoned by the United States more than 2 years ago. In addition to adhering to the conventional arms embargo that is due to expire next month, Pompeo said that member states of the United Nations must comply with restrictions. Venezuela has called on the international community to put up a united front and fight Washington's hegemony and its blockade against nations at a time of global crisis, including the coronavirus pandemic. In a pre-recorded speech to the United Nations General Assembly, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro emphasized the need to be united in the face of the deadly pandemic and called for the world to counter hegemony and imperialist ideas. Venezuela supports a multipolar world, a renewed UN system, a system that knows how to enforce international law and protect the people of the world. Maduro denounced attacks by the United States on the World Health Organization, the WHO, without explicitly naming the country. This is not the time to insult, to threaten the WHO. It is now time to unite in its favor. Maduro said the world defeated fascism 75 years ago, and the world will also win against those who seek hegemony, against imperialist ideas, and it will be able to defeat neo-fascism. U.S. President Donald Trump has accused the World Health Organization of siding with China over the alleged delaying of an inquiry into the origin of the coronavirus pandemic. China's President Xi Jinping ratified on Tuesday the Asian nation's contribution to research and the treatment of COVID-19, particularly in the search for an effective vaccine candidate, which he promised for international distribution. The Chinese leader also rejected any attempt at politicalization and stigmatization around the COVID-19 pandemic, minutes after his U.S. counterpart, Donald Trump, called for holding Beijing accountable for what he said was infecting the world with COVID-19. Chinese president called for international cooperation to confront the pandemic, stressing that the response to the disease must be guided by science, giving a key role to the World Health Organization shortly before criticized in a speech by Donald Trump. Sudan is apparently preparing to join the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain in normalizing relations with the Israeli regime in return for over $3 billion in economic aid. According to Sudanese sources, an announcement on a normalization agreement with Israel, similar to the one struck with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, could be made within days should Washington and Abu Dhabi accommodate Khartoum's request. What Sudan demands is more than $3 billion, that's billion with a B, in humanitarian assistance and direct budgetary aid in order to deal with an economic crisis and fallout from devastating floods, as well as a commitment by the United States and the United Arab Emirates to provide Sudan with economic aid over the next 3 years. In addition to economic aid, the Sudanese government wants the Trump administration to remove Sudan from the State Department's state sponsors of terrorism list. This issue is indirectly connected to the normalization deal with Israel.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream has been rebuilt and is working well at radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts like listeners in Willits, California and Toronto, Canada did this week. Many thanks. We will conclude with NHK Japan. In Thailand, anti-government protests have continued for 2 months, and they now want to amend the constitution to increase democratic rights and limit military powers. Thailand is launching 5G cell service with Huawei. Huawei says that U.S. sanctions will threaten the global semiconductor supply chain. Japan has scrapped an American-made multi-billion-dollar missile defense plan called Aegis. Airbus plans to use hydrogen fuel to power zero-emission passenger planes by 2035. NHK Japan.
Turning to Thailand, where anti-government protests have continued for nearly 2 months. Now, a civic group is proposing amending the constitution, including increasing democratic rights, limiting military power, and reforming the monarchy. The group submitted a draft that was signed by 100,000 people to parliament on Tuesday. It comes as lawmakers are getting set to discuss revising the constitution based on proposals from governing and opposition parties. Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha has faced increased criticism in recent months. Protesters accuse him of taking an authoritarian stance with the backing of the military. They want him to step down and are calling for free and fair elections. Protesters also want the monarchy to be reformed, which is a taboo subject, as criticism of the royal family is punishable by law. Over the weekend, tens of thousands of protesters took part in a rally in Bangkok. Demonstrators say they will continue until their demands are met.
Thailand and Chinese tech giant Huawei have jointly launched a facility aimed at promoting next-generation mobile services in the Southeast Asian nation. The opening ceremony for the Thailand 5G Ecosystem Innovation Center took place in Bangkok. Thailand's Minister of Digital Economy and Society, Puttipom Punakorn, attended on behalf of the Prime Minister. The facility has equipment to test products as well as booths where visitors can get a sense of how 5G services will work. These include exhibitions involving medical robots and face recognition based surveillance systems. Huawei reportedly committed about $15 million to the joint project and is sending engineers to Thailand to help train personnel. The United States has been pushing other countries to refrain from using Huawei products, citing security concerns. Despite the warning, the Chinese company has been increasing its presence in Southeast Asia.
Thailand is open to cooperating with any country. The government is working for the interests of the country.
Puttipom stressed the Thai government's intention to further cooperate with Huawei.
Huawei says the latest U.S. sanctions on the Chinese telecom giant will threaten the global semiconductor supply chain. The company is urging the United States to reconsider the move. Huawei rotating chairman Guo Ping said on Wednesday, the existing restrictions have brought great challenges to the firm's smartphone production. The U.S. government views Huawei as a threat to the country's national security. The Commerce Department imposed the new curbs on September 15th. The measures block sales of chips made using U.S. technology to the Chinese company. Guo says a disruption to the global supply chain would deal a severe blow, not just to Huawei, but to companies in other countries. He also revealed that chip makers in the U.S. are applying for licenses that would allow them to ship their products to Huawei. He said the firm is willing to use those chips. Japan is facing another setback with a multi-billion dollar defense plan it scrapped earlier this year. NHK has learned that the U.S. manufacturer of the Aegis Ashore system says converting the land-based system to shipboard use is just too costly. Japan scrapped a plan in June to deploy the Aegis Ashore system in two locations. It cited technical problems in ensuring that the rocket boosters would fall within the launch zone and other reasons. The Defense Ministry is now looking into creating an alternate system for marine use. It's seeking modifications to radars and other equipment currently being manufactured by a U.S. firm. Government sources told NHK that the U.S. manufacturer said the modifications are technically possible, but they would cost too much to be economically feasible. The ministry says it's extremely difficult to gain the understanding of local residents for the system's deployment on land. The cost of considering alternate measures is expected to be a major point of contention. Hydrogen is often touted as the fuel of the future. Now, aviation giant Airbus plans to use it to power zero-emission passenger planes. The company launched the move on Monday and expects the aircraft to be in service by 2035. That comes as airlines face growing pressure over climate change. Airbus unveiled images of three potential planes. One would be able to carry 200 people, nearly 4,000 kilometers. A smaller turboprop model would travel shorter distances. And a third eye-catching aircraft has its wings blended into its body. They would be powered by modified gas turbine engines that burn liquid hydrogen. Airbus also called on governments and the industry to help improve infrastructure for zero-emissions projects.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975-7245 and 11970 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.